thousands of dealers for one brand or another got very, very good at pretending to respond, which is what I call it. And of course, you can't really do that. That's not what the customer's looking for. The customer requires that somebody at the dealership reads the lead, figures out what the response is, and then responds.
Everybody, welcome back to the Dealership Fix It podcast. I am your host. I am Jacob Berry, and today I've got a very special guest. This is Fran from Pied Piper, and today we're going to talk about a little bit of the reporting metrics that he publicizes out there on Power Sports Business and MPN about the internet lead effectiveness and the PSI. So welcome, Fran. Glad to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Fran, I always like to start out these conversations with just kind of giving a little bit about your background on you and your experience in the dealerships and maybe a little bit about what Pied Piper does and the services that apply to power sports and motorcycle dealerships.
Sure. So my professional background, I spent 15 years as a manager and then executive for car manufacturers, Mercedes, BMW, Jag, Land Rover, and started Pied Piper in 2003. The part of the car business that I really loved was being the sales guy and having a team that would help figure out how to get the dealer network to perform better, you know, sell more stuff more profitably to more loyal customers. That's really what I enjoyed. And I started Pied Piper to be able to do that, not for one company and not for one industry, but across all of the companies in multiple industries. But, you know, I should stop and say, way before that, I was a motorcycle fanatic. And you're talking to a guy who has been an incredibly good customer, retail customer to the motorcycle industry for 40 years. I've bought more than 100 motorcycles, and I'm an equal opportunity guy. I'm just as happy, you know, zipping around Laguna Seca as I am riding a Harley Bagger and everything in between, off-road. If it has two wheels, I'm a fan. So I kind of have a little gleam in my eye when I help the power sports industry, whereas the auto industry is just business.
That's awesome, man. That's great to hear. I did not know that. So you are a consumer of the products that we sell. And so you're probably looking at it as maybe experiential, right? So I'm almost imagining that Pied Piper maybe came into power sports because of your own experience submitting inquiries or talking to power sports dealers, you know, digitally through the phone or through email, and maybe not having that great of an experience with them. Am I right?
You are right. Someone else owned Pied Piper, if some private equity person was the owner and it wasn't myself and my family, they would say, why the heck are you messing around with these power sports guys? You should be on a plane to Detroit every second that you're messing around with these power sports guys. But, you know, maybe that was true 20 years ago, but it actually turned into good business for us as well. But to your point, if you think back in the old days, you know, pre-internet, I would kind of scratch my head and wonder why it was that I would have to go in and arm wrestle the parts counter guy to get a brochure for a new motorcycle I was interested in buying. And more recently, it has been amazing to me that my phone doesn't ring off the hook from dealerships that I buy these things from, because I'm a laydown. I'm the easiest customer. But that's just not the way the motorcycle industry has worked, you know, for the past decades. It's been more, hey, when you're ready to buy, this is the place you can go to and give them the money and you can get whatever it is that you want.
It's certainly a unique industry, especially when you compare it to the only real counterpart we can compare it to, which is automotive, right? And even though they're wants versus needs, you know, you need a vehicle in most, you know, aspects of American life, you don't really need a motorcycle or an ATV. You can go your entire life as a consumer and never ride one and be just fine. You probably couldn't say the same thing about a car, right? So let's talk about some of the mystery shopping and the uniqueness in comparing the two different worlds, right?
Sure.
And so for the power sports industry, can you explain a little bit more about your PSI, your prospect satisfaction index, and how that mystery shop entails and how it helps dealerships improve sales and service performance?
Sure. So anybody that's worked for car manufacturers, any kind of research tool or sales tool that is available on the planet, these big OEMs, they use it. So you become familiar with all of these different tools that are available. And one of those tools is mystery shopping. So mystery shopping has been around forever. And when I worked for the OEMs, I was the client. You know, I would have a mystery shopping program that we would do. And I always found the information interesting, but kind of like asking somebody, did you like the movie? Very qualitative. Not to say that's not somewhat helpful, but it really wasn't rigorous science. And it really wasn't something that had legs as a program that you could use to definitively drive sales. So back in 2006 and seven, we at Pied Piper said, hey, there has to be a better way. There has to be a way to measure factually the actual behaviors that do drive sales. And we came up with Prospect Satisfaction Index, or PSI. And you can think of it like this. You first have to figure out where the math is. Hey, what are the specific salesperson behaviors that drive sales? You know, not that I think are important, or you think are important, or somebody else thinks are important, but just cold, dispassionate math. These are the behaviors. Dealers who do this tend to sell more than the dealers who don't do this. So that's what we did first for the auto industry. We did it for RVs. We did it for power sports. This is back in 2007, only for in-person selling.
Okay.
And then after we had in-person selling figured out, that's when we branched off into internet, web response, and also telephone and service telephone.
So tell me a little bit more about how it works, especially in the early days, right? I imagine that you've evolved since 2007 to maybe talk about different things, ask different questions, maybe have more questions or less questions, but how does it work with the in-person? You know, are you walking into dealerships? Do you hire people to walk in dealerships? Are these affiliates or people that you contract? How does all that work?
No, good question. So there are about 400,000 people in the US who would say, I'm a mystery shopper. And the companies that are mystery shopping companies, they use some subgroup from that those 400,000 people to do their work. And if you stop for a moment and you think about the traditional mystery shopping program, you know, you and I, if we were setting up a power sports program, we would say, hey, what do you think is important? Oh, clean restrooms. Okay, we'll have them go in and make sure the restrooms are clean. Let's measure if the salesperson smiles. That's probably important. Okay, measure that. And then at the end, we're going to ask the mystery shopper, hey, would you recommend this dealership to a friend? And we're going to hang our hat on that. That's going to be really whether the dealership's succeeded or failed. But what we learned was the mystery shoppers really have no clue about power sports, no clue about sales processes, pretty much no clue about anything other than their own personal opinions. And yeah. What we do, we hire mystery shoppers that are proven to us. So out of the 400,000, there probably are 20,000 that are skilled, call them actors and fact gatherers, where we don't care one bit what they think about the experience, whether they would recommend, you know, this fake visit to a fake friend. We don't care. All we care about is, did this behavior happen or did it not? Did this behavior happen or did it not? Did this behavior happen or did it not? And that's what we report back then to the dealership.
And these 20,000 out of the 400,000 that are kind of designated for power sports and motorcycle dealerships, they are somewhat of an enthusiast, or they know about the industry, or they know about the product at least?
So if they're women, so the interesting thing about mystery shopping, about 80 or 90% of those 400,000 mystery shoppers are women. And I have a newsflash, women make better shoppers, period, than men. Men are awful at shopping. You know, we get distracted by the shiny objects. And I say that kind of flippantly, but it's really true. So the challenge for, if you're shopping, mystery shopping for Ferraris and Lamborghinis and stuff like that, which we do, the women don't tend to buy them. It's pretty unusual. And it's the same for motorcycles, where there are a lot more women buying motorcycles today than there were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but it's still a minority. So we make sure that if we send in women, they have motorcycle licenses. Okay. So they're legitimate motorcycle riders. For the men, we don't. For the men, what we are concerned with is, are they good actors and are they accurate in measuring whether something happened or did it not? So those are the two things that we really, and we test them. So before they ever go in to do a customer pay evaluation, they've done two or three of these for us, and we've looked at the quality of their feedback.
Nice. And so we're still doing in-person stuff today in 2023?
We are, but you know, it's interesting. If an OEM came to us today and said, okay, Fran, we want Pied Piper to in-person mystery shop all of our power sports dealership every month, we would tell them that's probably not a good idea. That, you know, a dealership tends to know how to sell in person because the general manager or the dealer principal is walking around the floor and is observing and is seeing, hey, this guy, Jacob Berry, he's surfing the web over there while the customers are walking around, or he's eating a donut, or he says to the customer, I'll be over here if you have any questions. You know, as the owner or as the GM, I'm going to take care of that. I know how to do that. Or if at my store we offer test rides and you're not offering test rides, you know, I'm going to see that and I'm going to take care of that. So we would argue that in-person mystery shopping is really much more important for dealerships that have a problem. And from the manufacturer's point of view, the manufacturer can say, hey, what are the dealerships that are selling less of our product than they should be selling? Their market share is half of what it should be. Then it's really easy to do some in-person mystery shops and PSI evaluations and see they may do just fine. You know, it may be a bad location or a bad reputation, or there may be all kinds of other reasons why they aren't selling as many as they should. But if it is as simple as the salespeople are doing a bad job of selling, it's super easy to fix compared to those other reasons.
Hey guys, this episode is brought to you by Moto Hunt Premium. Moto Hunt Premium empowers power sports dealers with data and technology to give the best possible market advantage on every vehicle at your dealership. Moto Hunt Premium offers a suite of features such as real-time market analysis, inventory management, and up-to-date pricing guides like JD Power and NPA. Dealers love to leverage the platform to identify potential inventory risks and potential issues with your online listings. And it also helps to execute make and model strategies, enabling dealers to help move inventory faster and make more profit. To start leveraging our technology at your dealership, go to motohuntpremium.com. That's motohuntpremium.com to learn more and request a free inventory audit for your dealership today.
Okay, so you brought up manufacturers earlier, Fran, and I wanted to ask you about which manufacturers you're still currently working with on their behalf. I became first aware of Pied Piper, at least at a larger level, when a couple years ago you started working with BRP or Can-Am, and you were doing a lot of their internet lead effectiveness. It seemed like all of our dealers at the time were getting scored on just about every aspect of it. And, you know, they would typically get kicked up to me, and I would have to kind of look at these from a process, from a verification, meaning, were these results actually true? So tell us a little bit about some of the OEMs that you have worked with closely in the past and who you're still working with now.
Sure. So over the years, we've worked with most of the companies, I would say. To give you an example, in the car world, I think Mazda is the only auto brand that we've never worked with. No offense to Mazda, we'd love to work with them, but it just hasn't worked out. But in power sports, yeah, we've worked with most of the big ones. But you mentioned ILE, so Internet Lead Effectiveness. And I think Internet Lead Effectiveness is something that up until 5 years ago, there was no power sports OEM that was paying any attention to how their dealers were responding to web customers. And that's, of course, very different from what was happening in the car world. So 2018, right. None. And of course, we would go and meet with these OEMs for other services we were providing to them. But I remember one time we were up in Valcour in Canada at BRP's headquarters and talking about something. And I had a room full of BRP managers and executives. And I said, hey, by the way, this web response thing, because you figure by 2018, we'd been measuring the power sports industry for 6 or 7 years. And every year was the same. Awful. Yeah. And I showed this to the BRP execs, and they said, yeah, we believe you, but you know, some of our dealers don't even have websites, and we, you know, we're focused on other parts of the business right now, and maybe someday we can focus on that. And in 2019, that started to change. That's when Harley-Davidson became interested in it, Polaris became interested in it, Indian, and then COVID hit. And then all of a sudden, the manufacturers were a lot more interested in it, but I would say not interested enough to really do very much. And if I translate, when I say nobody was watching it, nobody was interested in it, if I translate that into some numbers for you, back then in 2018, if you were a customer and you contacted an average power sports dealer on their website, asking about a product. About a third of the time, you would get an email. There wasn't any texting back then, but you would get an email personally responding to your inquiry a third of the time.
Right.
And about a third of the time, you would get a phone call as a web customer with somebody trying to talk to you about your inquiry. So two thirds of the time, if you're a customer, you were getting nothing. If I fast forward to today, so 5 years later, there's been quite a lot of improvement, but what percentage of the time do you figure today you will get a personal email or text nowadays answering your inquiry today, 2023?
Well, I'm reading it on the last publication that you have. It's 52% of the time in 2023.
I still from a third to 52%.
To a little over half. I still find that such a staggering result that out of all the mystery shops that you deploy out there with these, yeah, with these, you know, 20,000 or so individuals or however many do the ILE job, you know, for as many of that go out, a little over half come back as a reply. I just find that such an incredible finding. And let's talk a little bit more about that. So we're talking about the ILE, the Internet Lead Effectiveness. The publication that you had put out not that long ago was ranking Indian, edging out Harley Davidson as far as their satisfaction scoring. So let's talk about ILE a little bit more in depth. I've got a copy of it here, and I think that's what most dealer principals, GMs, and especially the internet responsible people, we'll call them the lead handling people or internet sales people. That's probably what they're looking at best, right? So, you know, I've got a score right here, right? This particular one is a C. So they're average. But tell me a little bit more about maybe some of the weight ratings in the different aspects of it. And then there's one in particular I'm going to ask you about, but tell us a little bit more in specifics, how the ILE works and why we're doing this and why we're asking these questions and looking out for these triggers.
Gotcha. So the simplest answer to that is dealerships that have a good process for responding to web customers, they end up selling 50% more units to the same quantity of customers coming to their websites as the dealers who have a poor process or are ineffective at responding to these customers. And if you stop and think about it for a minute, some quantity of customers are going to try to contact the dealer through the dealer website. The dealer's going to blow them off, and they're still going to go to the dealership and buy a product from them. So it's not as if it's an on-off switch. If you're terrible at responding to web customers, you'll still sell some units.
Yeah.
But it's plus 50%. So it's a huge number. And what the other aspect of the web response part of the business, it's super easy to see the math of the payback. You know, if you're measuring in-person selling, it's hard to hang your hat on behaviors unless you're doing it over thousands of dealers. Then you can all of a sudden see where the behaviors translate to sales. But if you're an individual dealership and you don't bother to reply, and I mean, that's what's happening today. It's not like this doesn't happen anymore. I mean, as we said, went from responding a third of the time to responding half the time. That means half the time there isn't any email or text. Now we have to add in phone, because you can't ignore phone. And this is something that the car guys have started to figure out quite some time ago, but it's pretty new to power sports. And I'll give you some math to tell you why this is so important. Today, as a dealer, if you email the customers, about a third of those customers will never see your email, either because it goes into their junk or spam, or because they just don't check their email. I mean, if you think about personal email accounts in particular, there are a lot of people who don't check them every day even.
Right.
So about a third of the emails the customers will miss. And if you call them on their cell phone, about a quarter of those calls, the customer will never answer the phone and they'll never listen to their voicemail. So you miss about a third and you miss about a quarter. But if you religiously always do both, you're going to reach about 92% of those customers, because you'll either get them on the phone or you'll get them with the email. And texting, of course, is added on top of that. So texting will make that number go even higher. But what's fascinating, emails, texts, phone, they all serve a different purpose. They're right. Things you can do on one that you can't do on the others. And, you know, if you think about it, if you put your car industry hat on, back 15 years ago, car guys were taught, oh, you need to ask the customer how they would like to communicate with you. So ask them if they want you to email them, or ask them if you want, they want you to, you can't do that anymore. You have to ask for their email address, ask for their phone number, get permission to text, and then reach out to them every method you can. And how the customer gets back to you, they've voted with their feet. You know, they have shown you the way you're going to be communicating with them.
I love that. And so we're talking about, you know, doing the 3 points of contact, right? That's something that I'm a big advocate for. Now, in the things that I talk about over and over again is that, yes, you do need texting, you do need emailing, but the phone is a little bit more special, whether they answer or listen to your voicemail or not. Hopefully we'll get a connection there with that customer. But that to me holds the most weight, just because this is still a human to human business, and we're trying to convey emotion and all these other things to, you know, display our excitement for the products that we carry, right? And so I always hold a little bit more weight in that phone call. But let's talk a little bit more about the ILE, right? So we've got 20 different measurements in the ILE sure. score. What in the ILE holds the most weight in that sure. scoring mechanism there?
So what we know is responding and responding quickly is the most important.
Okay.
So if you have a beautifully crafted email, but you take 2 days to get it to the customer, sorry, that doesn't work. So speed of response is very important. And that's true whether you're sending an email, whether you're sending a text, or whether you're sending a phone call. You know, it's interesting. I was talking in front of 40 managers and executives at Polaris 5 years ago. And at that point, they weren't paying close attention to web response. And the head of off-road for Polaris, which is a big job, was sitting in the back of the room, and he seemed kind of distracted. And I mentioned to him that Penske Automotive was a client, and that they responded very quickly, and their ILE scores were in the high 80s. And he seemed distracted. He was playing with his phone. And then he said, "Fran, I sent a lead to the local dealer that, you know, is a Penske dealer, and they called, emailed, and texted me all within 15 minutes. And I think the light kind of turned on that kind of a response is very different from maybe not getting anything. So speed of response is definitely important. And you can't get a high ILE score unless you respond completely and you respond quickly. But quality is also important. I would say quality is probably a third of the scoring. And those are the things, you know, you hear about manufacturers putting a program in place to reward stopping the clock.
Right.
And that pays no attention to quality. And quality is important. There are a bunch of things that you can do in your communication that will impact sales rather than just answering the customer's question.
But Fran, isn't that part of the inherent problem, is that if our OEMs are going to reward us with, you know, back end or bonuses or some kind of monetary or inventory reward just by following rules that they put in place, like making sure you have a you know, below 30 minute response time to factory leads or whatever measurement tool that they're dictating, doesn't that kind of embrace bad habits to just, you know, boom, fire off an email just so I can stop the clock per the OEM lead?
It does. You're absolutely right. There's some great automotive examples of that, where thousands of dealers for one brand or another got very, very good at pretending to respond, which is what I call it. And of course, you can't really do that. That's not what the customer's looking for. The customer requires that somebody at the dealership reads the lead, figures out what the response is, and then responds.
So I've got a couple questions on the ILE, and these were just ones that I personally have been watching over the last couple of years, but the business hours of the dealership, right? So is that taken into account on speed of response if it's outside of the business hours? Like this one particular one that I have is, it was submitted at 8:30 in the morning, but the dealership doesn't open their doors or business hours until 10 a.m. And if they get a response out to the customer at 10:30 a.m., you know, how does that score into the response time?
Gotcha. So you figure, by the way, our people who do the ILE evaluations, they're our employees. Okay. They if you come and visit us in Monterey, you'll see a whole bunch of people sitting in front of desks doing everything as close to exactly the same as possible to what a customer would do. So there aren't any scripts, there aren't any bots There's no fakery. It's real live human beings sitting in front of computers. Okay. So we have multiple time zones. And what we try to do is to make it so that the lead comes in during the day, you know, during the normal business hours. There's some clients, incidentally, like we talk about the large automotive, they don't want that. They want them to be all kinds of different hours. But for power sports, 100% of the power sports inquiries should be coming in during business hours. If for some reason it's off by a little bit, if you told us that, we would just reshop it.
Right. Okay.
Throw it out
okay.
and reshop it.
So just moving down the list, you know, some of these questions that are part of the form that the shopper fills out, right? Did the email contain the salesperson's name, right? Did it contain the salesperson's email address? I was always curious about that one. Maybe you can elaborate, but if we're giving an email response back to the mystery shopper, why in fact should we have the email address of the salesperson in the signature if it's an email coming from that person?
Yeah, interesting. So what we've observed, so this isn't an issue with the car world, but in power sports, there was a time when the emails would be coming from xyz@dealerspike.com. And they wouldn't even be identifying the dealership, let alone a person. And that changed. I mean, to put it in perspective, the ILE scores, they range from 0 to 100, and they're super easy to understand the scoring. And in other words, if you have a kid that brings home a test and they get a 70 or an 80 or a 30 or a 50, ILE scores mean exactly the same. And figure in 2018, we'd already been providing ILE evaluations for power sports for 7 years. 2018, the average score was a 30 for the industry.
Wow. Pretty bad.
Yeah. And I mean, that kind of puts it in perspective. So now something like, did the email contain the salesperson's name or salesperson's email address? Those are worth fractions of points.
Okay.
If a dealership sends an email response to a lead and answers the question and also calls, they'll score in the 60s or 70s without even taking anything else into account.
Got it. Okay. So it's almost like the SATs, right? If you just kind of sign your name at the top and fail the rest of the test, you'll at least get a somewhat of a scoring on just that, right? So we're looking at a response. We're looking, did they attempt a contact at the very minimum? And that holds a pretty significant weight to the scoring overall, correct?
That's right. And the easy way to think about it is if the scores are under 40, they're really not personally responding. Got and it. If the scores are over 80, and by the way, half of the Harley dealers score over 80 nowadays. If they're scoring over 80, it means that they're responding personally and they're doing it quickly.
Got it. Okay. So let's go down that road. Now, a lot of the website providers, because you are shopping dealers' websites versus like a third party, a lot of these website providers, they have some default automated autoresponders, right? What is your outlook on the autoresponder just to give the customer a receipt of we received your lead and here's the unit that you had submitted? I see a lot of the scoring taking that into account for the first email.
Yeah. So two different points. One is for power sports, when we first work with a dealership, it's not uncommon for us to find that there are 3 or 4 auto responses going out, most of which the dealer had no idea about.
Yes.
And of course, that's a mistake. The customer doesn't want to get spammed. But what I would tell you is for 95% of the power sports dealers out there, an auto response email is a good thing. The only exceptions would be, like, for example, we mentioned the Penske organization before. They don't use auto responses, but that's because they can personally respond in 5 or 10 minutes, 100% of the time. So there are power sports dealerships that fit into that category. And for them, I would say, no, don't use an auto response. But for the vast majority, for almost everybody, an autoresponse is a good thing. Yeah. And, you know, my simplistic way of looking at it, I look at it kind of like a print ad. It's a print ad for your dealership that says, hey, O'Hagan Motors, you've come to the right place. We're family owned. We have inventory here. We have events in the weekends, whatever it is. Thank you for your inquiry. Somebody will be in touch soon, or even better, name a name. This person will be in touch soon. Or maybe it says, I'm the sales manager and someone will be in touch soon.
I agree. The autoresponders, yes. I shop many dealers as well. That's just kind of part of what I do. And yeah, they'll get an opt-in for newsletter. They'll get an autoresponder for this or that. Yeah. If there's a trade value, they'll get one or two for that, right? We're working with a couple of dealers now that have that, and they go, wow, I had no idea this was going on, because they're not shopping themselves. So, I see Pied Piper as a valuable highlight tool, right? A exposure tool to say, hey, maybe you didn't know these things were going on because you're not shopping yourself. We're doing it for you and showing you the results, whether you like them or not. So let's kind of get into that. There's obviously some dealers that are very defensive about some of these things, right? Maybe they have a process that they feel that is working. And I use the word feel, that is working pretty well for them, or maybe they've installed a process, from a trainer or another system or whatever, right? A CRM program. And they get a little defensive when they get delivered the results of not an A or maybe not even a B or a C. How do you help some of these dealers kind of understand why these things are important and maybe provide them with some further insights to help them embrace how the customers are shopping out there online?
Sure. So first of all, but the average dealership general manager does not know, and there's no reason they should, how incredibly complicated it is for all of these different pieces to talk to each other and for it to work 100% of the time. And I'll put it in perspective for you. The large auto dealer groups, they're the entities that tend to perform the best, and they score in the high 80s, and they do it month after month after month. They pay us to provide every one of their dealerships an ILE evaluation every week. Now, why do they do that? They don't need help with their process. They have a great process. They do it as a burglar alarm because they know that stuff breaks. And I mean, I'm talking about technology. That's to say nothing of someone getting sick or quitting or whatever it is personnel-wise. But things go wrong. And the website providers and the CRM providers and the enterprise lead management providers and everybody else, they don't tend to tell the dealers when stuff goes wrong. So without Pied Piper, the only person that knows when things break is the customer.
Yeah.
So that's an important point. But the other thing that I would say is I completely get it. I love working with power sports dealers because, I lovingly say it's mom and pop a lot of times in a good way. I run the store. It's my store. I run it the way I want to run it.
Yeah.
The typical auto dealership today is not that. The typical auto dealership today is all about processes. There's very little personal opinion in how it is run. So if it's my power sports dealership and I'm running it the way I want, more power to you. I'm rooting for you. And what I would say is eat the fish and spit out the bones. If there's some aspect about something that we're measuring that you don't like, don't pay any attention to it. But I'm quite sure that you care whether a customer gets any response or any phone call or any text or what that looks like. I'm sure you care about that as an owner.
Well, what about those smaller mom and pop shops, right? We know that industry-wide power sports dealerships, they vary in all certain sizes and scopes with lots of brands, small brands, size of the retail store. How can these smaller dealerships with maybe some limited resources, they got managers and staff wearing multiple hats and doing multiple functions within the sales or service department. How can Pied Piper's mystery shop help these dealers stay competitive in this marketplace?
Gotcha. So we know from the stats that of the 6,000 or 7,000 power sports dealerships out there, when customers contact them online, half the time the customer gets no email or text response in 24 hours, no personal one. That's what's happening today.
Yeah.
So what we tell the smaller dealerships is be relentless to respond once a day without exception. And what we say is, don't leave at the end of the day with digital customers locked up in your store any more so than you would leave if you had a physical customer still wandering around your store. Respond to all of them once a day without fail and treat it the same way you treat locking up at night, where, if somebody's on vacation, somebody else locks up at night. You need to treat responding to these web customers the same way. So once a day, you figure if half the time today the customers are getting nothing, once a day is infinitely better than nothing.
That's a great point. Yeah. If you know, you're the general manager and the sales manager and the salesperson all rolled up into one position, yeah, you got to take some time out or block out a certain amount of hours per day to just bang through all of those leads that you got for that day or follow up on some of them, at least before you go home. That's a good tip for the smaller guys for sure.
And I would tell them, don't sweat it. Don't worry about it. There is a big dealership over here that always responds in 15 minutes. Good for them. Don't sweat it.
Right.
At your store, that's not your reality. Don't worry about it. And you know, the interesting thing is there's a group in between. They do respond once a day, at least. And for them, I would say, do it faster. Not all the time. You know, I get it. Maybe there are two salespeople or maybe there's one salesperson. I get it. You can't always do it in 30 minutes, but try to do it in 30 minutes when you can. And again, don't sweat it. Just do the best you can.
Well, let's say they do embrace some of these changes based upon some of the findings, right? They see that they scored negatively on this one or this one or this one, but they got good marks on these other ones. So let's say that they change their process to implement the things that you recommend that customers are shopping for. Can you share any notable success stories of maybe some power sports dealerships or groups that have sold more units, had better service experience, or just overall their operations got better because of it?
Sure. So in the car world, the car guys have been measuring web lead close rates for more than 10 years. And so we have all kinds of data that says dealers who improve these behaviors, this is the impact on web lead close rates. Until recently, none of the power sports OEMs had that. Now they do. Now there are at least three that have it, four or five maybe that have it. And we've seen some of those numbers. So the power sports numbers are even greater than the auto numbers, the gap between, or I should say the lift between not responding and responding quickly. And that is the stat that I told you about, the if you score below 40, which basically means you're not responding personally, and we magically snap our fingers and change behaviors, and you score over 80, it's plus 50%. The actual numbers in power sports were even higher than that.
Let me ask it a different way. Instead of maybe specific power sports dealerships implementing these changes, any particular brands? Because I know that's typically something that you measure on a per brand basis, Harley, Indian, Polaris. Are there any particular jumps in brands since you started measuring to say, yeah, Polaris dealers, Harley dealers, they sell way more just because they do these things?
So the Harley network absolutely improved from looking at their performance in 2018 to looking at their performance today. They improved dramatically to the point where if Harley were a car brand today, they'd be in the top half of the car brands in their performance. But, you know, I would argue, hey, most of the Harley dealerships are, you know, anybody who has dealt with a bunch of different brand dealerships would say the Harley dealerships really are different from most of the power sports dealerships. They're standalone and they have good employees and they're profitable and all those sorts of things. So I would tell you the brand that I was most impressed with and surprised with was Polaris.
Okay.
Because Polaris has 1,200 stores. They have Ride Now locations, you know, whatever they're called now. They're very sophisticated stores that run just as sophisticated as any auto dealership. And they also have stores where there are three people in the dealership. You know, there's one person in charge of sales.
Right.
And everything in between. And they dramatically changed their behaviors across all 1,200 of their dealerships. So you figure 1,200 dealers, tiny ones, big ones, they went from phoning their web customers 13% of the time in 2018 to 48% of the time in 2023. And for emails and texts, they went from emailing and texting personally 33% to 67%. So they doubled the emails and texts and tripled the phone calls in that time period.
If you're a motorcycle and power sports dealer, you already know the biggest marketplace websites are clunky, slow, and riddled with ads. Even if you pay big bucks to list your inventory, your competitors can pay even more to outrank you. That's why we created MotoHunt, Our site is famously streamlined and quick, with no extra nonsense to confuse buyers or dealers. That's why we rank so high in search results without having to spend millions in advertising. Why pay three times as much? At Moto Hunt, one low price covers everything a dealer needs to get their inventory listed and collecting leads fast, with no multi-level pricing tiers and no way for your competition to out-premium you. No matter how many listings or leads you generate, your subscription price is the same. Click the link to find out how Moto Hunt can help you start generating more leads today.
That's incredible. And that was through, would you say, mostly having an OEM relationship with them directly and trying to put out there, hey, there's this scoring mechanism for these dealerships. They're getting it because they're a franchise dealer of the brand, and they're just more aware of it because of your mystery shopping reports.
So several things. One is, during that time period, the Polaris products were super hot. So it was, Polaris had their ear. If Polaris was asking for something, the dealers were listening to it because they wanted the product. So that's one point. But the second point is, if you think about the typical dealer principal or GM, they want to do this. I mean, if it was 10 years ago, we would have power sports dealers saying, hey, this part of the business isn't important. Nobody says that anymore. Everybody wants to respond to these web customers. It's just they're out of sight, out of mind. I mean, you know the way that it is at retail. At retail, your hair's on fire. Yeah. You show up for work in the morning with the greatest intentions, and then the day takes over. And then stuff drops off the edge of the table. And what I know is it's the invisible stuff because you're busy.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, you have all of these leads that nobody responds to. So think of us as the conscience, reaching out and tapping them on the shoulder and saying, hey, don't forget these guys.
Let me dive into a couple more brands here that you've got from your 2019 through 2023 ILE scores. Some of them I would consider luxury brands, and they were just surprising to me, right? So looking at KTM, we can argue Aprilia, Triumph, some of the European brands, Ducati, BMW, right? BMW is surprising to me just because they have an automotive division that I think that they're pretty, pretty on the ball with that from an OEM perspective. And they were scoring in the middle of the pack. What would you say about some of the Euro brands that have maybe an upper echelon of customer looking for those particular brands, and how they're maybe not responding as good as, say, a Harley, Polaris, or Indian dealer?
That's a really good point. You figure, if you imagine you're an executive and you have a dealer network with thousands of dealers, and you imagine thinking to yourself, hey, how easy would it be if I only had 150 dealers or 200 dealers or 300 dealers? It might be simpler, but by the same perspective, you don't have the support. If you think about, hey, the total number of employees that Ducati has or that Triumph has, or even KTM, they're much smaller organizations. But what I can tell you is, if I'm an executive at KTM in the US and I wake up one morning and decide, hey, I want this to change, I want the web response behaviors to dramatically improve, we know how to do that. It's not complicated.
Well, let's focus on BMW, right? So they sell BMW Motorrad, they sell on-road motorcycles, they sell adventure bikes, right? So they're kind of in the same class as, say, a Harley Davidson, right? They only really sell one or two types of segments of on-road motorcycles. They don't sell dirt bikes. They don't sell ATVs or side-by-sides or watercraft, right? But if we compare that brand to, say, Indian or Harley Davidson, right? In 2023, Harley and Indian had a 60 and a 61 score, where BMW had a 41. And
if I'll look give at another number for that. So okay. One of the numbers that we pay close attention to is, what percentage of the time does a customer get no personal response? And by that, I mean no phone call or no email or text answering their inquiry. They may get a response, but no personal response. And for Harley and Indian, it's about 1 in 5. It's about 20% of the time. And that's not too far off from what the typical car brand is. For BMW, it's 40% of the time. So it's twice as bad.
Wow.
So 4 customers in 10 who reach out to BMW today through a website get no phone call, no personal email, no personal text.
And the changeover year over year from 2022 to 2023, they went backwards. They're negative 9% in scoring. And they're the only brand that I see from your chart here that went the other way, whereas everybody seemingly is getting better in the industry, that's the one and only brand that went the other way. What do you think attributes to that?
I don't know. One item that it could possibly be, remember we talked about OEM programs encouraging dealers to stop the clock. Mm-hmm. It could be something like that.
I find it super fascinating. And then, you know, just to kind of continue on with the rest of your list here, it seems like a lot of the tractor suppliers, or maybe not the bigger, most, you know, tier one brands, we'll call them, you know, they're kind of sitting at the bottom of the list, right? Cub Cadet, Hi-Sun is a brand new brand, John Deere, Kymco, Tracker through Bass Pro Shops, right? They're kind of all sitting more or less at the bottom of the list. And is that just because maybe they are, you know, they sell the types of product and equipment that don't attract maybe some of these processes because they're just like not involved too much in the internet space with internet leads coming at them? What would you say about those dealers?
So we work with some of those tractor, you know, ag brands, and they're starting to get it. I think you'll see improvement, at least for some of those brands, over the next couple of years. I think it's more just a matter of kind of a little bit lagging behind. I mean, the people will say, hey, the power sports industry is this far behind the auto, and where's RV, and where are boats, and where's ag? It's interesting. The most popular product of these ag companies are the compact tractors. And they aren't bought by farmers. I mean, some farmers buy them, but they're bought by the same person that buys a Harley or the same person that buys a Ford pickup or something else. And they use their smartphone exactly the same way that they buy cat food or shop for houses or buy clothes. It's just the way we humans shop nowadays. It's no different for those ag brands than it is for power sports or it is for auto. I think it's just been they've been a little bit slower to adopt it, but I think you're going to see some big changes for some of those brands anyway.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. The consumerism and the trends on how we buy our goods and services nowadays, especially, you know, right post COVID, has really changed the game on a lot of that stuff. So interesting to see how they rank on your next round of findings there. So that's the ILE, the Internet Lead Effectiveness, right? A lot of dealers that are listening to this now, they're probably pretty familiar with it for their own dealership. Hopefully they've scored well. If they haven't, we can see that there's a lot of benefit to adopting most, if not all, of these practices in terms of what you're reporting out there should be the minimums, right? In terms of quick response to the leads, especially during business hours. But if you can do it at all times, if possible, right? The quality of the response itself, and then just including some pieces within that response, especially on the email side, because that's the easiest to score. And some of them you have on the scoring that I very much agree with, right? Like, are we answering the customer's question? That's still one that's missed a whole lot. Are we offering alternative alternative vehicles, right? If they're inquiring about one vehicle, which is really all the form allows them to submit on that dealer's website, are we offering a used option? Are we offering a different segment? Are we offering maybe a different brand, right? And then, you know, a couple other little factors in there that I completely agree with. So I think your mission is wholeheartedly trying to improve the overall, you know, industry as a whole through the consumer's eyes to make sure that we're making these changes, these strides towards having a better communication with the people who are wanting to buy these products from us. But let's talk about now the STE, right? And this one was super interesting to me because first of all, I didn't know that you had really measured the service side of it, but it makes total sense, especially now when we're having a shortage in service technicians. And by the way, this STE is the service telephone effectiveness. But I stated your findings in a previous podcast with a gentleman who represents MMI, Motorcycle Mechanics Institute, and we were talking about the everlasting shortage of qualified and trained service technicians, not only in automotive, but also in power sports. But I think that has a huge contributing factor to it, that we just don't have enough people to repair these vehicles, let alone maybe the storage space available. And certainly in the last year or two, we've had shortages or supply constraints on availability on parts. And so let's talk a little bit about your STE study. And according to the latest data that you put out there, it seems that Harley-Davidson dealers yet again had scored in the highest percentile for the satisfaction rate of a customer phoning in and really just asking some generalized questions about, you know, how quickly they could get their vehicle in, right? So take us down that road a little bit and talk about the STE.
So if we stop for a minute and we think, pretend we're car dealers or car manufacturers, the car guys measure everything. And you figure anybody that's listening to this, you have a car, you take it in for service, you're familiar with that process. And you probably get, the service advisor probably accosts you before you leave and says, hey, if you can't give me a five, make sure you let me know, because it's important. The car industry measures all kinds of things having to do with service. It's pretty straightforward. They measure customer satisfaction. They measure, was it fixed right first time? Was it ready when promised? Was it done for the price that was quoted? They measure warranty indexes. Are you, as a dealership, are you doing repairs you shouldn't, or are you not doing repairs that you should? They measure goodwill indexes. They measure all kinds of things. What the car guys don't measure is what happens when you try to schedule an appointment. And in power sports, a lot of power sports brands and dealers don't have all of that data, but they also don't have what happens when a customer tries to schedule an appointment. And, you know, I tell people sometimes that if, you know, I sold Pied Piper and instead I bought a power sports dealership, well, what Pied Piper services would I be sure to use? And there are two of them. I would be sure to use ILE to measure web response. You know, even if I had a wonderful process, I would use it as a burglar alarm. It's so important. I mean, that is the business today. But yeah, the other one that I would use is service telephone. And you figure, it's not uncommon for dealerships to record service calls. You know, you'll call the dealership and they'll say, hey, you're giving permission for us to record this for training purposes. But then who has time to listen to hours and hours and hours of calls? I mean, even if you do it occasionally just to get a snapshot of what's happening, what you really need is, you know, again, those cold and dispassionate numbers. You need to have something that tracks over time what's really happening. You know, how do you know your phone isn't ringing off the hook? How do you know that your employees aren't putting customers on hold for 10 minutes? And the other thing, if you put your OEM hat on, well, you want to know how far out all the dealers are for service, and you want to track that over time. Are they 2 days out or 3 weeks out or 3 months out? So they're super important things to measure. And what we know, again, from the car world is the way the customers are treated when they're scheduling service has a direct relationship with service loyalty. If it's hard to get an appointment, the customers either will go somewhere else, they'll go to an independent, or in the case of power sports, they'll sell their unit and say, this is a pain in the neck. Every yeah. time I take my side-by-side out, I have to get it fixed, and it's impossible for me to get it in for service.
I agree. Coming from service, starting my career there, I always felt, and I still believe this, that the service department takes over the relationship that particular right. customer has with the dealership after the sale, right? The sale is kind of right. transactional. Hey, it was really great. The salesperson is my friend now, and they really wowed me and CSI for selling that one new vehicle, right? But then now I got to spend the rest of the 2 or 3 years of ownership with the service department if I have a problem or I need installation or I have a warranty, right? And really, you could do it great 9 times, and then the 10th time you have a right. little bit of a flop, or you can't get in for service as a customer, and boom, that dealership is no longer in the thinking of, oh, where am I going to take my stuff to get fixed? Well, it ain't going to be that place, right? Even though they did it the 9 times great before. So what I wanted to talk about is on the chart here, which we'll include in the video component, but we've got an industry average here sitting at 46. Now, again, some of the brands that surprised me again are yet again, a few of the luxury brands will say, whereas a Can-Am dealer, a Ducati dealer, we've got Articat, Kawasaki, Yamaha, they're sitting below that average. So tell us a little bit more about the ratings in terms of this overall scoring. Is it the wait times and they're just taking weeks before their next scheduled appointment? Is it parts? What exactly is that we're looking at?
If you think about this, it's 100% through the eyes of the customer, because we care about owner loyalty, and the customer is the one that gets to decide owner loyalty. So if you think about yourself, you're picking up the phone to schedule service. And oh, by the way, we figured out hey, what happens when AI answers the call? We figured out, hey, what happens when we schedule service online? A whole bunch of other stuff too, but not to get distracted by that. Pick up the phone and schedule service. You figure as a customer, what you're looking for is for someone to answer the phone, for it not to take you very long to speak with somebody who can get an appointment for you, and for you to get an appointment that's within a reasonable amount of time. And a reasonable amount of time kind of depends, but it's not 3 months.
Right.
It doesn't have to be tomorrow. But if it is a couple days from now, that's probably a good thing. But if it's 2 weeks from now, that's probably okay too. In other words, it's not going to make you sell your side-by-side if they give you an appointment 2 weeks from now. So the largest component of the scoring is making it easy. So making it simple, making it so that it's not a problem. I pick up the phone, I call, I get somebody quickly. They don't put me on hold for 5 minutes. I actually speak with a service advisor. They don't throw down roadblocks for me. It's less of an issue in power sports, but in the car world, sometimes they'll say, what's your VIN? I have no idea what my VIN is. Well, you're going to have to call me back. No, I'm not going to call you back. What the hell?
Yeah.
So making it simple and easy is really the headline. And the amount of time it takes, you could still score in the, be up near the top with it taking you 2 weeks. So for the brands that you mentioned, if we contrast that to the typical Harley-Davidson dealership, I would say the Harley-Davidson dealership probably has a more well-defined process for handling these customers calling in for service on average than the smaller dealerships do.
And you know, you compared or drew a lot of comparisons to the automotive dealerships, which I get, right? A lot of people listening to this, they might go, oh, well, we're not trying to be like a car dealership, right? And that's been an argument I've heard over and over again. Yet, to your point, they do a lot of things great. And really, they're the only type of business similar to ours that we can compare to, right? And so I get that. However, drastic differences, right? When I call for my vehicle, my car, to be serviced by a dealership, I need that car quick, right? Because I got to go to work, or I got to pick up my kids, or I got to go to grocery shopping with it, right? We don't necessarily do that with my Polaris Razor or my Harley Street Glide, right? So, you know, it almost is that there's an emotional attachment to it. Like, oh, I really love this bike. I don't really love my Toyota Corolla, but I love my Harley, right? And so handing it off to a service advisor, there could be that emotional piece to it, but also getting it there is a whole nother thing, right? Most of these dealerships do not provide loaners, right? So it's not like I can ride it to the dealership, or if it's an off-road vehicle, right? I can't ride it to the dealership and then, you know, drive something else away from the dealership to go about my business. It's usually I got to load it up on a trailer if it's an off-road, unload it, drive it into the service department, and then, you know, it might take 3 weeks for them to fix it. But what do you say about kind of the ease of servicing a vehicle at a dealership, which seems inherently just problematic from the get-go?
So all of the things you just mentioned are, we measure them. And in addition to that, we measure, did the dealership offer free pickup and delivery, or not even free, pickup and delivery, period. You hit upon something interesting. It's a difference between power sports and cars. In the car world, it's pretty rare for the dealership to say, oh, just bring it in and leave it with us and we'll get to it when we can. That virtually doesn't happen. But that is very common in power sports. I would say a third of the time, at least, the customer's trying to schedule an appointment and the dealer says, we just bring it in and we'll get to it when we get to it.
Yeah.
And if you think about making it simple and easy for the customer, a far better approach would be to say, I can give you an appointment. I have an appointment 2 weeks from now. If you'd like to see if it's possible that we get to it before then, you're welcome to bring it in and we'll get to it before then if we can. That's way better than just saying, no, I'm not going to give you an appointment. Just bring it in and we'll get to it when we get to it.
Yeah. I think if I'm hearing you correctly, it's all in how you approach it, right? If you say, just drop it off and we'll get to it when we can, it sounds like, well, it's not really all that important. It'll sit in the back until someone's free. Whereas the way that you put it, hey, I've got such a schedule, we have to follow it. I can see if I can get you in earlier if you can bring it in, but really realistically, we're looking at this date, right? I think that's just professionalism that you're talking about.
You got it. And the other thing is there's some customers whose product is all roached and there are other customers whose product is wiped with a baby diaper.
Yeah.
And the baby diaper customer isn't going to want to leave it parked outside for the next 3 weeks.
That's another problem too. Yeah. I mean, let's go down that road, right? So side-by-sides are the biggest contributor to this issue, right? If we're talking about some of these legacy stores that were built and designed, the actual store itself for motorcycles and then maybe some ATVs, the real estate space inside the building, showroom and service storage area. Now these manufacturers are now building 14-foot long Maverick X3s, you know,
yes.
that are, they're called sand limos now, literally as a nickname, right? And so how does a dealer store all this additional service and sales product inside under their roof and not have to leave it outside? They can't. They're just physically incapable of doing that because these manufacturers have produced such a popular product that is gigantic in terms of space it takes up, right?
If it were my store, the good news is there's so much money to be made with those products from accessories and from service that it requires a shift in thinking. You have to pretend that you were a Honda motorcycle dealership in 1960 and you took on the Honda car franchise. You just have to think differently. And if there was no money involved, if it was not profitable, that would be different. But it is. You can make it work.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so one last question on your service effectiveness here. From what I understand, you're mostly talking to the dealerships and mystery shopping the dealerships on how easy it is to get in there. What about the timeline of it being there already and what that follow-up looks like from the service advisor side, right? We hear, or maybe think that our service advisors are not doing as great a job as they could with communicating the status updates or, hey, you know, like the guy that says, just bring it in here and we'll get to it. I mean, are you measuring how long it takes for a customer to hear back from said vehicle in the dealership and how often the service advisor is communicating the updates to it?
So what you're describing now is something that the customers can give you very accurate feedback on. So again, if it was my store, if my OEM isn't doing it, and you know, some of the OEM surveys, they don't come out every month, or maybe they're not as useful as they could be. But as a dealer, you can put together your own survey for your customers. I mean, the simplest is just phone calls. You figure if it didn't bother the customer, then don't worry about it. But what I would want to know if it's my store, I would want to know, was it fixed right first time? Was it ready when I promised it would be ready? And did it cost what I promised it would cost? Those three things. All the rest of the stuff, you know, would you give me a 10 out of 10 or a 5? I don't know what that means. But I know what it means if it was ready when promised and fixed right first time and the cost what I said it would cost. Those are the three drivers to repurchase.
I agree. And again, to reiterate this, is that you can sell a vehicle once and then it goes to your service department. And if 9 times out of 10, they do great, but that 10th time they kind of drop the ball, that can turn off the customer from re-entering your sales department and buying their second, third, or further vehicles, right, from that same dealership.
Sure. Hey, I have something else for you. And this isn't something Pied Piper provides, but... Sure. And plenty of you who take cars in for service, you may already have experienced this, but my wife has a Porsche that she takes in for service, and the tech, not somebody else, but the tech videotapes the underside of her car and gives color commentary on what he or she sees.
Yeah.
And texts it to Diane. And if you think about that technology, it's not very complicated. I mean, that's something that a tech could do with an iPhone, for that matter. But it builds that personal relationship, and that personal relationship will definitely pay dividends for repurchase.
I think it is fantastic, and I've seen it in action. We trial tested that with a couple programs that offer that same type of solution through like a dashboard. But there's a couple of points that I'll say on that. Number one, I think it's great. Yes. And it helps to upsell some of the service items, right? So let's just talk about it in terms of motorcycle or power sports terms. If an advisor needs to get additional diagnostic time, or they have an upsell because something's broken or dirty or needs replaced on a Razor or Maverick, we'll just say a side-by-side, right? it's a skill to try to explain to that why the customer may need it, but still I think customers feel, oh, this guy's gonna sell me something I don't need, right? That's the old mechanic thinking, is, oh man, he's gonna try to rake me over the coals and sell me shit I don't need, right? But now when you add a video component and you can point to it and say, look, see, I'm under your vehicle, or I'm on the side and I've got it halfway apart. You need this because this is what I'm seeing and here's why you need it. That would help with the upsell dramatically, right? Now I'm going to put a caveat to that. And that's going to be my second point, is that I probably wouldn't let the service tech do that. Now, speaking as a former service tech, when I was in the shop, you know, that's a different kind of a breed, right? Yeah. Service techs, primarily, not all of them, but primarily they're kind of focused in on their own thing. They're not as social as they, maybe the salesperson or the service advisor, the liaison to the customer should be. So I would probably suggest that if you're going to go this route and use a program, or just, you know, just send a raw video that way, that it be color commentated by the service advisor that can use certain words or phrases that maybe the technician is not that skilled at explaining some of these things.
Sure.
Yeah,
I'm with you. It could depend on the person. I mean, at one store, it might be the tech who's that person. No, you make a good point. And the other thing is, you don't have to make it a sales pitch. You can say, hey, this is what I see. One option is to leave it alone. The other option is B.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. And, you know, with these service advisors, if they're not upselling, period, in the service department, I mean, they're leaving a lot of money on the table. Because again, if you connect the differences between automotive and power sports, there's a lot of emotion in power sports when there's a lot of necessity in automotive, right? Sure. You need this to do XYZ, but in power sports, you can play off the emotions of the customer, especially in service, to say, hey man, you know, you need this because it's cool and you'll get a reason and benefit out of it, XYZ, right? And so I think that you can even take that to a whole nother level and upsell the customer at that time, or even while they're sitting on their couch looking at this video going, huh, yeah, I didn't even think of that. That's cool, right?
Good point.
So, friend, it's a pleasure talking with you, man. And I've been looking forward to this for a very long time. You know, I've been looking at your Pied Piper reports and I've loved them. I've also hated them at times. And it's really shined a light as, you know, looking at the industry and going, wow, these are some pretty stark figures. And if you look at it from an unemotional perspective through the eyes of the customer going, what is the experience in calling my dealership for service or submitting an internet lead through the website? What results am I getting? And you're shining a light on a lot of inefficiencies, I believe, on how many emails are coming out, the poorness of the response, the timeliness of the response, and just maybe some of the things that are, like you said, a burglar alarm to say, this is not working because of the technology side of it. And sure, my salespeople are great, but this broke in a month and I haven't shopped it in a month myself as the GM or owner, right?
That's it.
So it's impressive, you know, to see that, you know, you're reaching all times high with this stuff. You know, in the 8 years that Pied Piper has been around and conducting these studies, what would you say are some forward-looking statements, right? So as we're talking about the materials that you're giving out now to dealers and the publications that you're putting out there on the metrics to say, here's where we're ranking these specific brands or how we're ranking them. What are some trends that you see now that would maybe kind of evolve in the future as the power sports industry evolves?
So you remember the A, B, C, D, F grades for Eile?
Yep.
So I believe if you today, as a power sports dealer, if you score a 35 today, you get a C. That's going to change come January. And
okay,
the reason for that is the days of customers cutting power sports dealers slack are over. And if you're scoring a 35, it means that you didn't personally respond at all. You sent an auto response, but no email, no text, no phone call. And that is just unacceptable today. Customers don't give you the benefit of the doubt. They don't care whether you sell motorcycles or brooms or aluminum siding. The, you know, call it the Amazonification of us American customers. You know, we expect that if you give us a place to communicate with you and we communicate with you, we need to hear from you pronto. So the A, B, C, D, F buckets are going to shift, and that is just a reflection on customer expectations.
Okay, so raising the bar is what it sounds like, right? So
that's
maybe
it.
not changing or manipulating some of the scoring parameters, but really just giving it different weight ratings based on how the customer's expectations have changed.
That's it. There will be some minor changes to scoring, but everything is based on what the customer expectations are. And those customer expectations have shifted dramatically in the past 5 years.
Where do you see parts and accessories departments fitting into this? And one of the major reasons I ask why is because, you know, again, the comparison between automotive and power sports automotive, I would say that we obviously have parts departments, but customer interactions that department in automotive are kind of non-existent, right? They may have a little boutique where you can buy some nice floor mats or some seat covers or something in an automotive dealership. But in power sports, I would argue that that's a third of the business with accessories and hard parts and tires and all sorts of things. How do you see Pied Piper going after that department and looking at it through the eyes of the consumer?
So you make a very good point. And, you know, we were talking about X3s and Razors, and they're just a poster child for that, where a customer is going to spend $5,000-$10,000 on average on one of those. And that's something that we actually already offer. And we have power sports OEMs who we work with where we will mystery shop in person their parts and accessories department. And that is completely different from selling a unit. That has more in common with, you know, Walmart or Target or Bass Pro Shops than it does with a dealership. And it can measure all kinds of things. What makes somebody buy t-shirts at a Harley dealership and not buy t-shirts at another Harley dealership? We have a lot of, we put a lot of energy into figuring that out. So that's something that we offer right now.
And what about like parts availability, right? So if a guy is calling power sports stores and saying, do you have this part or that part availability, are you now or will you be measuring if they pick up the phone, if they are courteous, if they're answering the questions, if they're doing upsells, any of that?
We have never done that in power sports. We've done that in other industries, but not in the same, I mean, the same process would apply in power sports.
Got it. Okay,
yeah, cool. In other industries where we do that.
I'm looking forward to that one. So everybody keep their eye out for the future developments from Pied Piper here to include parts and accessories in the future, right? Certainly a big part of the business as a whole, right? Now, Fran, any last tips or tricks out of the things that we talked about today, internet lead effectiveness, responses, service, or even parts for that matter, any last parting words before we call it a day?
I think the most important is if you're responsible for a dealership, you're running a dealership, don't sweat it. Don't look at some report that measures 20 things and, you know, have your eyes glaze over and set it aside. No. Focus on something minor, simple, that is important to you and try to change that item. That's a good place to start. You don't have to agree with everything. You don't have to change everything. You don't have to improve everything. Start with the small items.
I love that. It's all about the details, right?
That's it.
I love that. All right, everybody. We'll call it a day for the Dealership Fix It podcast. A special thanks to Fran O'Hagan, CEO of Pied Piper. You all know the reports, but now you know the man. So everybody listening to this, make sure to hit the like button, share, subscribe, and definitely tell everybody about it. If you find any value in this, make sure to tell other dealership people. We provide a lot of different industry insights. We bring on experts like Fran and many others to share their experience in the industry and how we're just trying to make it a little bit better place for the consumer to buy our products and enjoy their lives. So Fran, I appreciate you coming on, man. Great conversation today. And just say everybody, thanks, and we'll see you next time.
Take care.